Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm Tim, here in the rugby dungeon, in person with JB and Phil. When was the last time this happened?
It was pre-World Cup.
No, not all together.
We've not all been together before since...
Feels like...
6 weeks?
I don't know if you remember. I don't know if you're a big Star Trek fan.
I'm not, unfortunately.
So, obviously, for those Star Trek fans who do know, Picard was taken by the Borg and he was away for a while. Riker had to sit in his seat and drive the thing for a little bit. And then right at the end, they all come back together. So, yeah, we basically lost Tim for a long time and now he's back in the driver's seat, at the helm.
I'm back to Paris tomorrow.
Of course. Oh,
so, what a lifestyle.
What a jet setter.
And that, but a week on Sunday... The day after the World Cup final, I'm back for good. Mm. As Take That once said.
Until the next trip abroad.
Now, one of my favourite things in sport at the moment, right, is people who are no longer playing sport in full sports kit of their team. Is anyone here in their full sports kit? are you wearing, Tim Cocker?
I've got Bayonne Bombers shorts on.
I've got a dressing gown on.
And nothing underneath.
Nothing else.
I've got a load of Manchester Metropolitan University.
You've got Sail Sharks on your arm. You look like a full-time coach.
Let me just say, this is going to be a World Cup semi-final preview. We'll do this little bit of preamble, but we must get into it. I can talk about this later. But
okay.
In fact, I'll put a pin in it. I was very close to where you lived today.
Rome Park?
Where you grew up.
Were you at Bangor?
Colwyn Bay?
I was in Bangor.
Mm.
I will tell you. I'll tell you all about that in a bit. But this podcast is going to be, well, the first of the two podcasts we're doing today. Whether you want to listen to the other one depends on if you're a patron or not, because there is some content we do on the podcast which we reserve for our special friends who we know can be within our circle of trust, and it may be extra spicy content. And I think that's what we're going to do today, isn't it? We're going to do a Patreon podcast. So if you want to support us there, patreon.com/eggchasers. You can, I was going to say Twitter, but...
Not really.
Don't really do that.
It exists.
Find JB on Instagram.
Don't do that. I've had so many followers like this week, and I don't know what's going to make of it.
It's because we were talking about all the heat you were packing.
Well, something like that. I've had followers. I'm worried they're going to be disappointed.
Okay. Well...
With the rugby content. Not with the content, obviously.
Well, let's talk about rugby content right here. And we've got a World Cup semi-final. We've got two teams announced. South Africa and England announced their teams in the morning as we record this. Friday, Saturday are the two games. And there seems to be so much less interest in these two games than a week ago.
Yeah, there's an air of inevitability.
Yeah.
Now, the best outcome might actually be... Oh, no.
Go on, say it. Say those words, JB. Yeah. Finish that sentence.
England versus Argentina. Actually, no, that's not the best outcome. The best outcome is going to be South Africa versus Argentina for the sport, I think.
I think either New Zealand, South Africa or England, Argentina would be the best games, the best spectacles.
I agree with that.
You have no interest in watching New Zealand, South Africa, do you?
New Zealand, South Africa is the biggest rivalry in the sport. They hate each other. There's the was it 99 or 95? I can't remember the final. Where
95.
There was the accusation of the
food poisoning.
Food poisoning of the New Zealand team.
They've
both won it three times. They're going to see who can be the only one to have won it four times. South Africa are trying to do the thing that New Zealand can say that South Africa have never done.
We see this twice
winning,
a year.
Winning back-to-back World Cups. The rivalry's massive.
New Zealand won back-to-back.
11 and 15.
11 and 15.
They did, New Zealand did.
So when South Africa say, we've won it three times as well, yeah. New Zealand say, yeah, but you've never won it back-to-back. So that's now what South Africa can do. And they can
I'd rather New Zealand go up. I don't want to see them again. I want them all to pack their bags as a team and form a nice baggage train onto Air New Zealand and get lost. That's what I'd like them to do.
I would be... given the situation we're in, I would take the South Africa New Zealand final, because I think it probably will be the best final.
Yeah.
Because they are the two best teams left in the tournament.
Yeah.
And for all those extra reasons you stated before, Tim. But I am a bit sad. I'm a bit sad we've not got France and Ireland, at least one of those two teams, still in the competition.
If you had to pick one of those two teams to still be in the competition, which one would you pick? Which one are you, in other words, which one are you sadder about is no longer part of it?
I know what JB will say.
Yeah.
And I will say the opposite. I would say Ireland.
Oh, grow up. Fine. I am very sad France have gone. You must have been sad when France went.
Yeah, I am. I am.
I'm sad that both went. I really wanted at least one of them to get through, to have a shot at the big one.
Yeah, a new, like, so someone operating at the top level, that could be a new name on the trophy. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. The question, though, is, how can England beat the box? Because, right, if you were Rassie Erasmus, and I have such a begrudging admiration for that fella, purely as a rugby coach, I think he is a legit genius.
He's good.
I think he's... So, I think he is... going back to the Lions tour 2 years ago, I think he is a total dickhead. Like, I really, really do. But... That video was so... We went into great length about it, but it was such a terrible thing.
The Nick Berry thing was shameful.
To accuse someone of racism to get your way...
But is that the second time... Was that the same incident? Because it's Alwyn Jones, when he said Alwyn Jones got the rib of the green because of racism, was that the same incident?
I can't remember.
I can't remember. But that's 62 minutes.
It all left a sour taste, all of that.
But you can't... Yeah, that really does. And I still... I lost a lot of respect for him as a consequence of that. But you can't help admire him as a coach. And the way that he has brought on that South Africa team and developed it from... Because I think even though the personnel have changed, sometimes personnel maybe arguably have changed for the worse... I think the way that they do things and the way that he thinks about the game, him and Nienaber, because Jacques Nienaber is very important to it, you can't help but admire it. And a couple of things that we mentioned from the weekend, the marking of the kick and then calling a scrum with no need to do it, just a pure flex of your scrummaging power.
Stop there.
Yeah.
Explain this to me, because I've not heard this. And we were speaking about it before the podcast. What are you talking about?
So Damian Willemse caught a kick in his own 22, called a mark.
Remember this.
Referee gives a short arm free kick, and Damian Willemse says scrum. And it's and South Africa win a scrum penalty and get further upfield. It's a flex.
Right.
And in the press conference afterwards, or maybe it was a day afterwards or whatever, he was asked about this. And this is one thing I do like about Rassie Erasmus. You ask him a rugby question, he'll give you a fully in-depth rugby answer.
Same as Steve Borthwick, if you bother asking him the question.
Yeah, and if you've
got to ask him the question, though.
If you've watched any of Steve Borthwick's recent press conferences, he's not getting asked any rugby questions. One of the did you see, I think it was after Saturday, someone asked him whether how they feel about being underdogs going into the weekend, and he was so pissed off about being asked that question. Because it undermines what they've just done. And he said, we do not care. Like, Whatever you want to write about is entirely up to you. We do not care. And then he was like shaking his head and staring down the journalist who asked him that question.
Well, I quite like that. That's like
I like it from Borthwick.
That's a bit of fire in the tummy stuff. I can get on board with that from Borthwick, because quite often you find he answers the question that he wants to answer regardless of the question that he's asked.
Now,
Razzy Erasmus explained it, and he said, well, France like to keep the ball in play, so they don't give up many opportunities for set pieces. I'm paraphrasing and shortening it. Our scrum's a weapon that we like to use as a launch play, and we weren't going to get many opportunities to use it, so we discussed the fact that if there's a mark, we could use a scrum.
Perfect.
Yeah. Perfect. And they won a scrum pen from it.
Yeah, which it's a risky strategy, because you're giving the opportunity to the opposition to win a penalty in your 22, which gives them a direct scoring opportunity either via 3 points or a 5 metre line out.
I like it.
It's a hell of a ball. I like it as well.
It's like the line out thing where you tell the opposition you're going to drive. You just make it obvious you're going to drive. Like, you just got to stop us now.
It is
a pure flex. I love that. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he did, interestingly, one of the things that we spoke about on the last pod was the crossfield kick.
Yeah.
Putting seven men out there, and he said kind of the point that we made, but he said they try lots of things. He didn't say what specifically other things they've tried, and lots of them don't come off, and people either never comment on them or they call them as negative. But when it comes off, as it did in the France game, it's fantastic.
And that's what I love. There's the constant innovation. You feel like they're, because you talk about this, I think you've both used this. You talk rugby is a series of trade-offs, and you can do one thing, but there's you leave things open. As you said about the risk in the scrum penalty in your own 22, it's a series of trade-offs, and I just love the innovation and the constant thinking. And I also another great moment from a press conference this week was Alex Lowe from the Times, friend of the pod, good guy. He asked Razzy Erasmus, so what's that England team you've got written down on your bit of paper? Because I think Razzy baited. I think he knew. He kept looking down his paper and going, oh, England have got this many caps per player and they're this weight and the team we think they're going to pick, blah, blah, blah. So he was like, he was just inviting.
Yeah, he wanted that question
to be asked.
So what was his team?
He just read out the team, which was basically the team from the weekend. Okay. Or he just said Smith or Stewart.
He was, in essence, just saying, look at all these caps, look at all this experience, look how good they are, trying to convince everyone that they're really good.
Yeah, and what he was also doing was, he was just kind of going, I think he was giving off the sense of, we're so in control, we know what's coming, and we're prepared for all eventualities, and I don't know, it felt fun. But the question I would have loved to have asked after that, if I was in the room, he said, oh, you know, this is what we think they're going to pick. I would have liked to have gone, yeah, okay, Razzy, that's what you think they're going to pick. Which England team would you pick?
Yeah.
I mean, he wouldn't answer that one, but what do you think he would... So this is where I want to get to. Like, if you were Razzy Erasmus and Jack Nienaber and you had that kind of blank bit of paper and you were trying to come up with some amazing new way, some innovation to beat the box, because England are heavy underdogs. How do you do it?
Are you asking us to win a World Cup? Are you asking us to get to a World Cup final?
Yes.
Because I don't think I'm qualified.
No.
No, I'm qualified.
Yeah, you're definitely...
I'm not qualified. Who is?
You got Tok H promoted.
I haven't.
Nearly.
We have got at the league through a series of restructures. We did win a league. We won some cups.
2 weeks on Saturday, you're playing, JB. You have to play.
I'm playing this weekend in the lead up to it.
And then in 2 weeks' time against Broad.
I will be there.
Yeah. Fantastic.
That's where I'm going to be on the 4th of November.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll see you on the sideline.
Big game. Big old game.
So
what would we do?
What would you do?
What's been done already? Okay, so what new things have been done?
I'd say here's one thing I'll throw in there. I think because Marcus Smith, it looks like he's going to be out, maybe this won't be an option, but I was thinking, keep Marcus Smith, put Freddie Stewart on the wing. To A, neutralise any potential crossfield bomb type thing, and maybe exploit that as a attacking weapon from an England perspective.
I think Freddie Stewart's better at chasing kicks than he is at fielding them.
Yeah.
So the wing, the wing makes sense. I mean, you've got two good fullback under the high ball, or certainly under the high ball wingers in Johnny May and Elliot Daly, who perhaps give you a little bit more going forward. Although not, they don't have the same crash ball edge that Freddie Stewart does. So Maybe.
What I do? Every single position I can think of is dominated by South Africa. Like, position groups, back row was dominated. You know, they are so dominant, back row, front row. Front row, they're going to be... Yeah. So, I guess I'd depower my scrum. That would be a gamble that I'd be willing to make. I might bring in Bevan Rudd. We've seen that work before, and I think there is some logic there.
What, so you should go looser, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, if you're going to play, just go and play. I think Bevan Rudd is a unique talent in the propping world for what he can do with ball in hand, so...
There you go. You know, I like your thinking there.
I mean, there's something there. If you're not going to win the scrums...
He started that game 2 years ago when England won.
Yeah.
Mm, that's a good point.
So, I think about something there. For me, something to do with the 13 channel. It feels like there's been all sorts of revolutions everywhere, except for the 13 channel. So, we're looking at Marnie Libbock, a fly half that can't kick particularly well, but he does other things really, really well. We've seen the evolution of the 12, who is now like a secondary ball-carrying eight. You see these up and down the league, the competition, whether it be Bunyaki or you've got whoever plays for South Africa, whether it be Esterhazen or D'Alande, who did a great job. 12 is getting big, but we're not really seeing much going on in the 13 channel. So something there. I don't know what, though.
But yeah, what options do England have at 13?
Ollie Joe Lawrence. Marchant actually played really well, though.
Yeah,
Marchant. Do you think you go Manu Ollie Lawrence?
Mm. I'm not sure I'd go Manu. I'd go Ollie Lawrence, though.
At 12?
Yeah, I think I'd go. So it's just something which I've not seen before. That's very conventional. There needs to be something else.
Yeah, because it's Ollie Lawrence, they've not seen him, but it's not like they've not seen players like Ollie Lawrence before.
Yeah, he's not...
Like, they've played against Manu, they've played against Lau Mappi,
France got quite a bit of change out of short-range kicking.
Yes, he did, actually.
Against South Africa, they got quite a bit of change out of that.
And grubber kicks are very useful. The evolution of the kicking game has been remarkable this World Cup alone. So how teams seek out space is very, very good. And space seems to be the thing which they want more than anything else, and they seem to be very, very good at getting it. You've got crossfield kicks, you've got the little grubbers when they go out wide, or to get out wide, like diagonal. Also, you've got those L-type kicks where they wing it out to the wing and then it goes straight forward from there.
Yeah, I think that's the way. Not just... So, kicking game gets a lot of press, positive and negative, and there's a lot of like predictable box kicking. I don't think that's the way you beat the box. I think it is the alternatives. It's the more unusual, the little dinks over the top, the grubber kicks, the crossfield kick, the L kick, the kicking, yep, kicking from 12 or kicking from 13 or kicking from 15, just to keep them on the toes. And also, right, Razzie spoke in his press conference about when they lost to England a couple of years ago and when they played them last year and when South Africa beat them last year, that England were able to put pressure on them at line-out time, particularly with Itoje and Laws and now Chesham in that lineup. I think that's the way you do it. You push, force them back and try and then totally disrupt their line-out. Not that that is going to be easy.
Nope,
but
it's not.
There are, like you said before, JB, there aren't really many areas of weakness there. If they're dominant in most areas, you've got to pick some that you've got to target.
And do you oddly maybe try and slow the game down? Like, South Africa did this. This was a tactic that South Africa used against France, slowing it down, getting the ball off the pitch a lot.
Right.
Do England do that even more than South Africa?
How
do
you get Benambi off the field? Legally.
Yes.
Legally.
Yeah.
How does that guy...
Yeah, that it's not slowing it down to get Benambi off the field. It's speeding it up,
so he is a scrimmaging machine. He can scrimmage all day long.
Yeah.
He'll be happy to... But, and by the way, his loose play has been phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
But if you're going to get him off the field, you're going to have to work him hard. So what are the things you can do to make sure their hook... Like, what channels does he defend in? I would be attacking there continuously. I'd be making him get up and down until at some point Dion Ferry has to come on.
Kicking to him when you're kicking off.
Yes.
Targeting him in everywhere.
That actually like lends a bit more credence to your thought that like go with the guys that
don't drop the ball.
Cricket would never don't make any handling mistakes.
You can't.
But like,
which you know that's a problem because that puts more pressure on you. It's like what we saw in the World Cup final 4 years ago. If you know you drop the ball, you are conceding a penalty because you're going to get penalised at scrum time, you can't drop the ball, which puts pressure on you, which makes you drop the ball more.
Yes.
Conversely, well, South Africa can play with more freedom because they know if they drop the ball, they get a penalty and they go 50 yards downfield.
Yes, this is true. Now, a way not to drop the ball is not to be caught in contact. A way not to drop the ball might be looking at what Ireland did, which is the voluntary tackles behind the gain line. Build up your phases. I mean, that was brutal, though. I mean, what Ireland had to endure to do that, England can't do it.
Did you pick up Razzie's little dig at Ireland when he was running through the amount play, like the caps, the weight, the type of teams? There was something where he said, England and South Africa, we've been able to rotate our teams, and some other teams haven't had the luxury of rotating, and it might cost you occasionally.
Ouch.
Paraphrasing, but it was basic. That was his dig.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be my... So I'm looking at getting Benambi off the field. That would be my goal. Well, I don't know how I'm doing it.
So that's actually speeding the game up, not putting the ball off the park. But then you can't not put the ball off the park and play fast and also have loads of lineouts.
Yeah, but maybe the lineout was just
The lineout kicks off in. You don't want the lineout to start with, do you? You want the lineout to kick in when he goes off the field.
Benambi's off.
So it's pick Bevan Rod.
Yep.
And just go rapid.
Go wild, yeah. Go absolutely wild.
Bevan Rod with
make sure you
Genge off the bench.
Genge off the bench.
Play everything short. Play everything around the fringes.
Sinclair starts then.
Sinclair could well start. Yeah, play short.
Theo Dan starts.
Play off the edges. I mean, I've always wondered about this. This is a thing I've actually thought about for an amateur team. But imagine you're lucky enough in training to have 15 versus 15. In Talk H, we are lucky enough, but we've never done this. Now, if I decided to dress three players in a bib of some description and then tell my attacking team all session, you can only take contact into those three bibs constantly, would that be effective on a Saturday? And I think it'd be phenomenally effective. So you would target their three best players. So who are the three best players in the tackle? Whoever they may be, and just go after them over and over and over again. So they've got to get up, they've got to make more tackles. And when they start making errors, everyone starts making errors.
So who do you target in that South Africa team?
There's so not got many weaknesses, but Benambi, who would you target? Well, Benambi is one.
Dilambe?
No, I think you've got to be careful with this, because I think someone like Dilambe is just happy to make tackles.
Yeah, and that's what
he
was targeting.
An absolute
all
beast.
Day.
That's exactly
what it is. Do you not target...
Peter Steftetoy.
Do you not target Libok?
No, because that's exactly what they want you to do.
Yeah, okay.
Right? So they start hiding him, and when you don't target him, it's a success, and they're trying to organise everything so you don't target him. So actually, you go for the 2 points of strength. So someone like Peter Steftetoy, Benambi is a bonus, and then Dilambe. When Dilambe starts dropping off tackles, people start scratching their head and go,
what on earth's going on?
Hang on a second. And it's over and over again. And when he's not in his defensive line because he's at the bottom of the ruck, what then? When you don't let him up continuously. So it's a mixture of hitting him all the time. So did you see one of the grassroots podcasts we're talking about this week?
No.
I have the clip.
No, you don't need the clip, because it's only regurgitating stuff that I've seen and read loads of other places before, the battle stats.
Battle stats, yeah. I'd never heard it.
Yeah,
I'll give credit to them, because I hadn't heard it before that.
Yeah. I've heard it lots of times before.
So Jim and Goody were talking about this, and I just love that, the sort of battle stats. But, you know, make that play against them. If they want to play that, yeah, target their three best players over and over again.
Now, this is... So, I'm just looking at the stats from last weekend. South Africa attempted 201 tackles.
They missed like 40, didn't they?
Yeah, they missed 43 tackles.
I think that's
79% tackle completion.
Yeah, that is a measure of... But that's... We talked... Because when you used to... when you would always criticise Owen Farrell's and Saracens generally...
Can I just say, I still criticise Owen Farrell.
You do still.
And that's exactly when England were losing.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So... Yeah, no, but you've criticised Saracens or whatever, but it's a consequence of the style of attack, isn't it? When you fly up that style of defence.
There is a range. Okay, there is a range. And I think you can't... Tackle completion is meaningful within a certain range.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah, I do agree with that. If you trend to zero, you're going to have a problem, unless you're so dominant that you never have to make a single tackle.
Yeah, exactly.
but or you miss one of one,
and
miss one of one, you concede one try. But if you score 100 tries, then you're okay. They did at least attempt a lot of tackles. So over 200 attempted, which is a big number.
I think there might be a fair few changes in the South African team, or maybe four. I'm going to guess four changes. By the time you're listening to this, the team will probably be out, but I'm going to go there'll be four changes.
So Razzie hinted at a few things in that press
conference.
Yeah,
the players that might suit playing England better, which was like Pollard and Moody.
Yeah, how did he phrase it? He was like, you could be tempted to go for a 6-2 split, or I could be tempted to start 4-4. Faffy and Hondre as an example.
I would love to. If I was English, I'd want Faff starting. I would want Faff starting 100%. He makes too many mistakes. He's too hot-headed. He can be amazing.
He was awesome when he came off the bench.
Look, he can be amazing. He can be amazing sometimes, but also he can be too important to a team. And if you can quiet him down, he's not a functionary as such.
I tend to agree that I would rather him start than Reinach. I think Reinach is I think he doesn't get a fair crack at the whip, although he started last weekend in the Springboks team. Superb.
Mitchell learnt a lot from him when he was coming through the ranks at Northampton. He's the guy that took over from Reinach.
Indeed. And Mitchell wishes he had half the pace that Reinach had.
And half the pass.
Half the box kick in.
Yeah, Mitchell needs to come into his own, and if he doesn't,
he was able to play like Mitchell plays a little bit more at the weekend because the forwards gave him a platform, and he's always and England actually sort of tried to play.
He hasn't taken to it as much as I hoped he would. I really thought he was going to be a star, like instant star.
Yeah,
the way he plays for Northampton, I thought
international rugby is a massive step, isn't it?
And it turns out it is.
He's generally being asked to go against his natural inclinations because he's generally being asked to play the distribute off 10 rather than off 9 and box kick, which both of those, like you're putting a bit of a square peg in a round hole.
Now, does anyone think that England is just going to be England regardless, and the ship is going to go down on their terms?
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I don't know.
I think England will probably lose, and that's not a... but I think they'll be closer than people think. But
do you think they're going to be tactically rigid? Like, they're going to just play the England game style and see what happens?
But the England game style against Fiji was different from what it has been. I think it'll be more like the England against Argentina than the England against Fiji.
England versus Argentina is probably... I mean, if they can start getting drop goals left, right and centre, that's not a bad shout either.
Points are
precious.
It's not a bad option, that.
Particularly if Libbock starts, because if you can get 3 points and they can't, and you get another 3 points, then all of a sudden they've got to get a try, they're 1 point up, but then you hit another 3 points. That's not a bad shout.
Definitely got to take points wherever, whenever they come. You've got to keep that scoreboard ticking. Concern is that they just won't get any chances. Too solid.
Yeah. But to be fair, they weren't getting many chances. You know, they weren't getting the traditional chances against Argentina, and that's what made it so good, actually.
Yeah, but England have in their games controlled the territory. I think I saw a stat today saying they've had the best territory of any of the teams in the semi-finals.
This sounds about right.
So that's where once you've got the territory, there are always scoring opportunities through drop goals. So yeah, one of the things you've got to be careful of, which South Africa sent out a message to England when we spoke about it before, if you are box kicking or if you're kicking and you don't find grass first, you've got to make sure it bounces outside or it's going to land outside the 22. You can't kick too deep, because kick too deep, scrum time, penalty against you.
Every kick has to be contestable from the box kick.
Has to be.
Really contestable.
Or you're using those grubber kicks, those little dinks over the top, the unusual stuff.
So, Stewart on the wing from an attacking perspective, or at least you position him as one of the guys chasing the kicks, and Bevan Rod to start. Bevan Rod and Theo down in the front row.
I'd still keep Jamie George, but Bevan Rod, I could see a logic.
Bevan Rod, Nick Dolly.
Harry Thacker.
Yes. Give me Thacker on the phone. Very good. Goodness me. It's going to be a big ass.
Right, okay, so the way Phil always frames it, let's finish this by saying, if we played this game 10 times, how many times does South Africa win?
9.5. They get a draw.
So I would go... I said something similar to a colleague recently, that South Africa would win 90 out of 100, and of the remaining 10, England are going to get lucky in 2 or 3. The bookies have this. The bookies have got England over sixes. So, England would win about 15 or 16 out of 100. Just looking back on the stats, and just purely looking at the last games, do you know what the current track record is?
The last game was a win for South Africa. I was there at Twickenham. England got booed off the field. It was Eddie Jones's last game in charge.
Yeah.
The game before that, England won at Twickenham in the Autumn Internationals. Marcus Smith, that was where Manu Tuilagi went off early, and it was Smith, Slade, Marchant.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which adds a little bit more credence to your idea.
Do something in 13.
Yeah.
Ballers, just get a bit faster and looser.
The game before that was the 2019 World Cup final.
Correct.
South Africa. The two before that, one was Twickenham, England won. One was Cape Town, England won. So you stop there, and the last five, England have won 3, South Africa have won 2.
So.
But you go back a bit further. You go back all the way to just after the last World Cup. Because 2015, it was definitely a different South Africa team. Almost entirely... that was when they brought the old boys back, Matt Field and various others. But post-2015, it's played 8, England 4, South Africa 4. Problem I have with that is from what I've seen in these big games, in this World Cup and in previous World Cups, but certainly in this World Cup and these two teams, South Africa have got another level. South Africa can step up. They did it against Ireland in the game that they should have won. They did it against France. They did it in their final warm-up game against New Zealand. They just stepped up a level that takes them beyond England. Now, I think this is South Africa, clear favourites, but maybe England win 2 out of 10.
Yeah, I was going to say 1, if I was being very, very generous, 2 out of 10.
So, yeah.
A 20% chance is, when you actually put it in those terms, the way it's been characterised as, this is going to be South Africa by 30. I mean, maybe that happens. And I say 1 or 2 times out of 10, that is the outcome. But I see this in a World Cup semi-final. I think this could go the way of, could. And I'm going to say maybe most likely, maybe 5 out of those 10, it goes the way of South Africa v Wales 4 years ago, and England make it really hard and ugly, and it's
a 3-point or a 5-point win,
less than 7 or less.
Yes,
7 or fewer.
Yeah, it's a 1-score win, because the pressure affects both teams. Like, you see in big sporting events, not just rugby, you see players who would normally take things in their stride, and they just can't do it.
A red card is another thing which could massively swing the game.
Yeah, true.
I don't see it coming for South Africa.
Yeah. Risk is on England's side.
Do you know what else?
There.
I think... So, Sam Kane's face before that New Zealand Ireland game, we talked about it on the last pod, hearing what Rico Ioane said to Johnny Sexton after the game and Brodie Retallick said to Peter Omani after the game.
What did it say? I have no idea about this.
Rico Ioane apparently said to Johnny Sexton, don't forget to pack your bags, get on the plane. Don't forget to get back. Just made some comment and cupped his ears to the crowd, like as in all the uh-huh. So and Brody Retallick said to Peter Romani apparently just obviously what he'd said to Sam Kane, he just went F off 4 more years, do one basically. And so the point is, you piece together Sam Kane's face, Rico Ioane, Brody Retallick. I mean, these are amazing players. I'm not knocking it. Some people have said, oh, it's out, you shouldn't do it, whatever.
Rugby values.
I'd say Ireland kind of started it by Peter Omani doing that in New Zealand when they beat them in a series. And that hurt New Zealand. So they made it, point being, they made it personal. You can tell in the build-up to that game, to get them in a place to win that match, they made it personal. And that's one little energy that England can unlock if they make it personal. 15 of the 23 men that were in the World Cup final 4 years ago are in the England squad now. 15 of the 23.
You don't get many second chances in sport, do you?
No, you don't get many second chances. And they should like emotionally make it personal. And if that means one of them goes out and does something stupid and ends up getting a red card on 70...
Don't do that. No.
I'm not saying do
penalty underneath the sticks, 2-point lead.
What I'm saying is just like, we'll be able to see it in their performance if they go to a darker place, if they can unlock something that we haven't seen and just...
Yeah,
because that's what it's going to need.
So many problems with England, though. I mean, one of their biggest problems, and this has been around for a long time now, is...
Bill Sweeney?
Well, Bill Sweeney is the single point of failure, yes. But no, there is...
Patreon.com/eggchasers for an extra spicy content.
So there is another element, and they've been doing this for years, and sometimes it works beautifully for them, and most of the time it doesn't. They come out of the traps hot, like really hot. So you can see an England team absolutely hammer people for 5 minutes, but unlike Ireland, South Africa, who just carried on doing it. I mean, they did drop off slightly. England do drop off, and when they drop off, that's when they start to fade, start to make mental errors, they start to make skill errors, but they can come out really, really hot. So maybe you don't want that to be too personal. I don't know. Maybe this is the time they come out really hot, build a lead, and they continue. But in my experience, it's always backfired.
It's not always backfired.
Well, they beat Ireland doing it, actually.
And they beat the All Blacks doing it in the World Cup semi-final. Yeah. They had a good run of doing it under Eddie Jones. It was almost like Eddie Jones was kind of controlling those first 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then when his control had waned...
And they'd score early too.
They'd fall apart. But who knows? Who knows? I think we're all saying South Africa win.
Oh, yeah, South Africa.
We spent a long time trying to convince ourselves that there might be a route for England to win.
Well, as much as anything, as I said at the very start, the interest seems much lower because people are disparagingly... It's not just that people are going, oh, South Africa are favourites, New Zealand are favourites. It's actually, I think partly because of...
Well, France being out is a massive thing as well.
Bitterness from some quarters for better teams not being in the competition. That needs to stop. Because would it be better, if you were French, would you rather have got to a semi-final and lost there?
You tell me, because...
I don't see the difference. What's the objective? To win the World Cup?
Well, all I'm going to say, Tim, is... All I'd say is that the England fans have been very content knowing that their route to the semi is actually fairly straightforward. I'm of the opinion you've got to beat all the best teams and never whinge about it. Like, you just have to. You want to be the best in the world. Mm. There's nothing wrong with beating all the best teams. Don't whinge about it. On the other hand, the England route to the semi-finals, a lot of people have said, yeah, we will take that all day long. So I think the answer is you just take what you're given.
But to reach a final, England will have to do what France couldn't manage. So who cares that France would be in the semi-final?
Yes, quite. Yeah, but I think the argument would be England should have been out earlier. Early, but you can only play what's in front of you.
Yeah.
That's all you can do.
Yeah. And don't whinge about it.
Yeah, well, but the point being, in the parallel universe, if you lose to South Africa in the next round or whatever, or in the final, it doesn't change who wins the cup.
No.
So, yeah. Anyway.
So just looking, you mentioned 14 or 15 of the England players played in 2019. It's about the same, depending on who they pick, but 14 or 15 of the South Africa 23 will have also played in that final. So it makes a fascinating semi.
It is fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is, but we're all saying...
I'll predict the scoreline, England 12, South Africa 32. 20 point win for South Africa. There you go.
I'm going to predict England 18, South Africa 25.
And there's another semi-final.
Yeah.
We actually know the teams for this one as well.
We do.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, I've seen the New Zealand team.
Argentina have changed scrum half. So yeah. They've got one very average scrum half has gone out and one average scrum half has come in. But other than that, the 23 is the same.
Yeah.
And for New Zealand, they've Mark Talay is off the naughty step. Yeah. He's back in. Fainganuku, who had a great game, is out.
What did he do?
Don't know.
They still don't know. They've not said. Something to get him a 1 week ban.
I think there was probably bed bugs, yeah. And so he had to find somewhere else to sleep.
Do you know, like, it's either bad enough to go home or it's not. This 1 week ban is so stupid. You either send him home or you don't.
He didn't sweep the sheds.
He was sort of naughty.
A little bit naughty.
I hope they get smashed.
Anyways, back. Brodie Retallick's rotated onto the bench. Sam Whitelock starting. And I think that's it.
Takiaho comes in for Dane Coles on the bench. That might actually be it.
Yeah. And Argentina can win. They've beaten them. They can win this. Again, they're being written off like it's going to be a 30-point gap, which it may be, but I don't see it going that way.
Yeah. You know, it's... The bookies have got this an even bigger win. So Argentina are like 11s or 12s, which is...
To me...
So they're basically saying that if you played that game 10 times, Argentina wouldn't even win it once.
Yeah, they'd win...
They'd win it a fraction of once.
They'd win 7 or 8 out of 100, something like that. 7, 8, 9 out of 100.
That Argentina have got a better chance of beating the All Blacks than England have of beating South Africa. And I think this because when... Argentina played England, their last big game. Even though I wasn't overly impressed with the general performance, I was impressed by one particular aspect, which is their ability to break the line. They have got some good athleticism. They're a hard pack. They're not a great pack, and they're not they're not a great scrimmaging pack anymore, but they can carry. And on top of that, I love the narrative around them, which is you can lock these boys in a hotel room and they'll come out and play. So if they can unlock that sort of spirit, that attitude, you talk about making it personal, there'll be something which can fire up.
I think that could work for Argentina, maybe in a way that it wouldn't work for England. Actually, you want them bawling their eyes out in the national anthem, ready to go out and end.
They
someone.
Locked us in a hotel room and we still beat these idiots. I mean, that would be something which I'd go with.
Yeah. You want them to have a sense that, look, everyone's written you off. Yeah. Show them what the bookies are saying and it will actually...
I think I would put the betting odds around, around the change room, put clippings of the paper. That's exactly your team talk.
So Buffelli with his top off, swinging it around his head in the fans at the weekend, loved it. I loved it. Some people have knocked it for them. Like, oh, they've just played their World Cup final. I loved it. Their fans are amazing.
Yeah. They're a great team. They're a very likeable team as well. I think if Argentina had some of their historic great props... I think they could really trouble
Marcus Ayerza.
Hang on a minute. You're assuming that their historic great props would be going up against the All Black.
The current...
Carl Heyman.
I am assuming that they're going up against
these
the current
guys
All Blacks.
Them. Yeah.
No, Argentina against... Argentina's best ever props in their prime.
Ayerza against Carl Heyman.
That'd be great. That's what I wanted to see, right? But actually... This crop of All Black props is not all that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the best Argentina props against a weak All Black team could really trouble them.
De Groot and Lomax are on they're tracking to be very, very, very good.
Yeah, I think so. But this is the thing with young props, isn't it? This is why Dan Cole's back. Like, it takes a lot of experience. It takes a lot of different body angles. It takes all sorts of numerous scenarios before you get a properly seasoned prop. They're like logs of teak. It takes a long time to season them.
And there is also the survivorship bias where you've got to go through some... You've got to break quite a few props before you get the right one. Look at guys like... what's his name? Alex Corbisiero or Henry Thomas or like guys that were going to be the next big thing.
Yep.
Matt Stevens. Oh, he actually did.
Matt Stevens.
He had a good career.
Paul Hill.
Yeah.
Christ.
Like just guys.
Kieran Brooks.
Aaron Painter.
Yeah. all of those Harry
They're
Williams.
Mostly English, aren't they?
Yeah, we are just listed English ones who could have, would have, should have.
Because there's not many in the Welsh list, is there? There's just a discarded English one.
Well, because there's no one to rotate them to. No. You just have to stick with the same guys.
Or you better yet, no. Well, you're going to get hammered again this weekend. See how you
go. Sorry.
How about this week? There's nobody. It's like the speech in Any Given Sunday, where it's like, son, go out there, because there's no one left. It can't get any worse.
Oh, I'm going to watch that film again.
Such a great film. I can't tell you how many times I've watched that film. And do you know what?
Willie Beeman.
My favourite bit isn't even the speech. It's everything about it. It's the ambience. It's everything. I love that film. That was out on DVD when I was in university 20 years ago. So God knows how old it is.
Well, I watched it at the cinema.
When was that?
That must have been awesome.
I bet it was a 15, and it was probably not long.
Yeah,
it was
definitely a 15.
It was probably not long after I was 15.
Crikey. The party scenes in it are great. It makes me want to go to a party. The women, the partying, yeah, I'm all about that.
Yeah. Rugby's not at that level, is it?
I don't know. You've been out in Bath. Been out with the Bath lads.
Why do you think Finn signed?
It came out in 1999.
What?
Oh, actually, here we go. So, in the UK, it came out on the 31st of March 2000, which was 6 weeks before my 15th birthday.
There you go.
So, I saw it either as a 14-year-old or 15.
You got the stats of when you went to see films.
Awesome.
So, back to this game then. I was saying a huge...
Argentina got a maul it, and Julian Montoya's got to be at the back of that. I mean...
Montoya's going to be important.
That's one. When they've won their big games against New Zealand, when they won that big game against Australia and they got that last-minute try, the maul was massive.
Yeah, and they've got two of the best in the business.
Crevy and Montoya.
It's still to this day that they are the best in the business. One's 32, prime prop territory, hooker territory. And then you've got Creevy, who's still doing the business. So that's absolutely fine. But mind you, so is Dane Coles. He's not on the bench.
He's
not around. No. But I'd love to see those two hammer it out for one last time.
Yeah.
Saddle up the war horses.
Coles and Creevy. That would be good to see.
Never mind.
The other thing that Argentina have, they have got a world-class kicker in Buffelli, who is superb. And they've got some, like you mentioned before, they've got some lovely runners in that back line. Buffelli, the two Carreras.
Big lads as well.
Cinti. Yeah.
They're all quite big.
Big Cinti fan.
Yeah, Cinti's great. Choco Barra's great.
I was going to say big lads. They're up against Jordi Barrett and Rico Ioane, who are...
They are big large lads. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, those two, actually, it's worth just dwelling on them. You spoke about generational talents for Ireland, Sexton, and maybe Bundyaki. Whether these two centres that we mentioned then are like the greatest ever All Blacks to play in those positions, I doubt it. But physical talent.
Even in recent times, Conrad Smith is.
Conrad Smith and Marnon is.
Conrad Smith would be the first to put his hand up and say, I am not the athlete that Rico Ioane is.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. Absolutely.
Yeah. 100%. And the same goes for Jordi Barrett. Jordi Barrett is so unusual. He's massive. He can kick. His skill set. I mean, who is the best All Black 12?
Marnon,
something like that. And again, I'm sure Marnon would be the first to say, I can't do what that guy does. Now, it's not to say that they're going to be the best, but they are two serious pieces of kit.
And they're both young as well.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just looking up...
Rico's about 28, and I think Jordi Barrett... But 28, I'd say.
They've got another World Cup in them, if
they're both 26.
Are they? So they are young.
Two World Cups, they are young.
They've got they could have another two World Cups, especially with their pace, because even as they approach their 33, 34, not the next World Cup, the World Cup after that... They'll still be dangerous.
Wow.
Wow. So everyone's saying New Zealand win.
Yeah, New Zealand win, but I hope they have an off day.
I'd love to see at least one upset, although that does raise questions over the final. I'd love to see two upsets.
Yeah.
That would really excite me.
In that game, I want to see Marcus Kremer just ending people. I haven't seen the best of him this World Cup,
Do you know what the problem is with Marcus Kremer, though?
What?
He's very easily endable himself. So he's got a wonderful body for absolutely smashing.
No, he can stand there. He's got one.
Because he's very big. He's very tall. He presents a beautiful target for the top tacklers.
Because he runs in quite upright as well.
Yeah. In fact, it might have been against New Zealand that I saw this. Maybe it's Sam Kane, actually. But they absolutely levelled him. Levelled him. I was like, oof.
That Kremer, along with Petit and Lavanini, they've managed to avoid the card so far, arguably slightly luckily against Wales and Tompkins' head. I hope one of them doesn't get this. This would be prime. I hope they don't.
But going back to what we said,
save it for the final against England.
Yeah, save it for the final against England. But I hope they don't get a card. Obviously, but it might. I think Argentina might need to go to a place. They might need to have tears in their eyes, be so fired up that they risk that happening. In order to win, you have to walk the tightrope of Lavanini on a knife edge.
Lavanini's
a bad example. I'm trying to think
because he does so many stupid things as well.
He's so stupid. He is. Like, who would be the good example of someone playing on the edge? I was going to say Tom Curry, but no, Ben Curry. there's so few players that can play like that. Oh, Quagga Smith, he plays right on the edge. Right on the edge, just the inflictor of all things violence. Oh, by the way, do you know the battle stats?
Yeah, he's top.
He's top?
Yeah.
I knew that I was on to something when I was watching him. God, I love that man.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's awesome.
Inflictor of pain, distributor of violence, Quagga Smith. I'd want that on my... If I was that good, I want that actual inscription on my tombstone. Not father or, son of, father of, brother to, not that, husband of, no. Inflictor of pain, distributor of violence.
He's that violent and that destructive when he comes on that I actually want him to be, released from a cage.
A cage, go!
Do you know what?
They have to unlock. Like Razzie comes down, holds up the key like he's in some WWE thing, unlocks the cage, and lets Quagga out.
Or maybe it was a different colour light.
So I'll bear that in mind for your tombstone, but I've already got it planned.
Now, have you gone?
It's going to be unwise but not illegal.
Thank you very much. Yes. Unwise but not illegal. Me and Philip Schofield buried next to each other.
Right. So we're going to do another podcast, a quick but very spicy Patreon podcast. And thank you
are
to
we?
All our new patrons.
Oh, we are.
But just very briefly, I drove past Colwyn Bay today.
Oh, yes.
Past our old stomping ground.
Bangorai.
Went to Bangor University because while I was back, I got back last night, Tuesday night, and I go back to France tomorrow, Thursday.
Now, Bangor University does not sound like a place where the first team would play.
No.
So who do you take?
I'm taking the reins of Manchester Metropolitan, third 15.
Nice. Ooh. There'll be some good players there.
Yeah, it's good standard.
Now, here's a question for you, Tim. Are you doing the right thing?
What's that?
Which is sending them to a club which will look after them, take them on the beers, has a phenomenal...
Yep.
Or are you sending them to Broughton Park?
There is a little link up with Broughton Park.
Honestly. But, imagine being stuck there on a Saturday night.
But yeah, the boys got a 51-0 win. Solid. Two from two so far. So I'm back Tuesday night to Thursday morning, so like 36 hours, and I've managed to fill. Today I've done a podcast, gone to coach/watch the university team and coach my son's team as well, and done a YouTube video.
A preview of Argentina.
So I've basically done nothing but rugby in the 36 hours that I've been back from the Rugby World Cup.
Well, I've been hard financial advising all day today, hard out of the
Beardmore cubed financial advisors.
I have been rushed off my feet all day. In fact, I was in the bath and I forgot that this was on because I've been financial advising so hard. And you've probably been doing pipes and wires again. Is that right?
Let's not talk about my work at the moment.
Let's not do that. All right. So
thank you very much. Enjoy the semi-finals. We'll be there after it to dissect it all and realise how wrong we were. Let the boys play.
The boys play and what?
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.